Good morning, everybody. This is Jim Mazzetti, and this is The American Dream. We are here every Tuesday from 10 to 11, and this is no different. Holy cow, we're here again. I can't believe it. I'm just going to remind everybody who's actually just joining us or just joining us for the first time. This show was kind of created because I was inspired by all the entrepreneurs in Orange County, and there's just so many of them. And kind of my goal and mission here is to, of the show, and what I love to do is kind of bring people on the show that are taking the chance to make their dreams come true and taking a leap of faith and get up every day to not only serve their company, but their families and the community they serve. And that's it. This is the American dream. It's but it's not without effort. Let's put it that way. And real quick before we get started with our guest today, I just want to make sure we do reach out and say a quick prayer and remember the people in Paris and all the stuff they're going through. As we remember, 9/11 is not that long ago for a lot of us. But on, you know, and that kind of, that's a sad note, but on a positive note, we're here, and this is the greatest country in the world. That's why we get up every day and fight for what we do and how we do it. And lucky enough for me, this is actually a special treat, and he didn't even know this until he actually got called. My special guest today is Kevin O'Reilly, who is actually a local guy from Chester, New York, who created a company called Satin Fine Foods. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me this morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. And if you haven't detected from the slight accent, Kevin is not from the U.S. He's actually an immigrant from, I believe it's Dublin, Ireland, right?
Originally from Dublin and 26 years living in New York, so I think it's still there, it's still hanging in there, that accent.
Just a tad.
Just a tad.
Well, I kind of told you off air, I grew up with that accent very, so I understand it very, very well. Both my parents were both born and raised in Dublin, Ireland, for that matter, and they came here, let me see, I'm 47, so I'll give them 1 year, 49 years ago. And welcome, Kevin, thanks for taking the time. Again, you know, Kevin came here from Ireland, he started his own company called Satin Fine Foods, and why don't you give us a little history of, tell us about yourself a little bit first.
Sure. Yeah, I was born and raised in Dublin, Ireland. I grew up in the suburbs of Dublin. We had a family retail bakery business. So growing into that type of business as a kid, you get dragged in and I was probably at the age of 9 or 10 cleaning pots and pans and that kind of thing. And eventually went on to learning the trade, learning the craft, working with bread, cakes, pastries, etc. And actually, when it came to time to leave school, my interest was more in architecture, draftsmanship, that kind of thing.
Is that right?
But the mid-80s in Ireland was probably like 08 a few years ago, where the industry was just, there was a recession going on. And I decided to jump into college and study bakery production management, etc. So
now, where'd you study that?
Yeah, so I studied in actually Kevin Street College of Technology in Dublin, and it was 3 years full time, and my qualification would be the equivalent to a bachelor's degree in food science.
Okay.
And actually, it was while I was in college in my second year, I had the opportunity to come out to New York as a student, and I came to the Bronx. That was my first home. I lived in Frog's Neck in the Bronx, so a good Yankee fan, of course.
Of course. And, is that a typical Irish thing, by the way, before we... Like, I'm very good at getting off topic here, because my parents immigrated, and apparently all good Irish families have to end up in the Bronx first.
Well, of course I'm going to say yes, but I suppose it really depends on where family is. And,
yeah.
And I had older aunts and uncles that had
that are located there, yeah.
New York. I had an aunt that I stayed with in the Bronx, and it was a great place then and still is today. Probably really hasn't changed that much. So I arrived in on June 22nd, 1987, and I recall it was probably about 95 degrees. Of course, I arrived in wearing jeans and a sweater, and that was a Thursday afternoon, and I started work actually 3 days later on a Sunday working nights. I had just went down to the local bakery, and got a job working nighttime from 11 p.m. at night till 8 in the morning, working actually in an Irish bakery in the Bronx. So
really?
I was working nights, and that suited me. I did that for 4 months, and worked at night. And then during the day, I'd jump on the subway, go into Manhattan, walk the city, get to know New York City. And it was a lot of fun. You know, I was 18 years of age.
Oh, the world is your oyster, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I went back, I finished up college, and my employer here in New York asked me would I consider coming back. And, you know, as a 19-year-old student, just left college, I figured, yeah, it'd be good, go back for a year or two, save some money. And here I am, 26, 27 years later. Still trying to save some money.
Well, that is the American dream, actually, yeah. Right? It's one of the things that do it. But it's what an adventure.
Yeah, no, it was good. And my first few years, I worked in the baking industry. And then I took a job in 1991, working with a company for 10 years selling ingredient products. So while I knew the baking end of things, I had the advantage of being able to go out there and sell ingredients. So I was selling chocolate and bread and cake mixes and fruit fillings and all high quality products. And one of the products I sold was an imported roll fondant that nobody knew of or heard of here in the US. Really, roll fondant was unheard of at that time. And my job was calling on distributors, calling on retail and wholesale bakeries up and down the East Coast, selling bread concentrates or dough conditioners to companies like J.J. Cassone and Rockland Bakery, and working
Oh, sure.
with local distributors. And I worked that for a good number of years and really got to know the industry.
Now, so I was going to say, there's the true education right there, isn't it? I mean, is actually working in the business. Obviously, you had to learn your craft, but really learning all aspects of the business. Right.
Yeah, you learn the craft, and I think it's important, I suppose, looking back.
Have the foundation.
At the family business that as a kid, you know, being dragged out of bed on a Saturday morning at 4 a.m. by my dad wasn't too thrilling. But looking back,
we love that slave labor, by the way.
Yeah, I have a lot of great fond memories of it. Wouldn't change a thing. And it was fun. And, my elders, my peers at that time really taught me how to work. And the college piece, of course, is important, and having the piece of paper. But then, as you say, you know, having that, coming to a new country and having the ability to travel, meet people, work with companies, you're always learning.
Yes.
That was just very important. And that really set the stage then. I was selling, as I said, an imported roll fond that really the quality, it was a very poor quality product. And people in the U.S. were just starting to stumble into roll fondant. And I suppose I should explain, what is it? It's basically a pliable roll-out cake icing, cake frosting, as exciting as that may sound.
Woohoo!
Yeah. But it was interesting because at that time, a lot of brides were coming into bakeries and showing pictures of these beautiful, elegant cakes and saying, hey, this is what I want for my wedding. And most bakers hadn't a clue what it was, and it took some education. And the company I worked with, there were six other salespeople. So if you could go out there and sell a truckload of cake mix, or you could sell a couple of pails of fondant, most chose the other route, the volume item. And,
okay.
It kind of became knowledge within the company. Well, O'Reilly's from that part of the world where they work with this product, so let him take care of it. So I kind of became that go-to person for
the fondant.
And I was selling the whole complete line of products. But over time, you know, it really became kind of a specialty of mine. I got to know the product. I got to know the people. I got to know the trend out there that was just a really niche trend in the marketplace that was growing. And, over the years of working with that company and watching the sales slowly grow, I also dealt with the complaints of that product because, as I said, it was really
sure.
a poor quality product. And I always felt, well, somebody should really develop a fondant product for the American market. Don't take something that works maybe in the UK or Switzerland and try and force it on this market.
Right.
So I set about doing that. I actually, just in the basement of my home, I had a test kitchen that I would bake product in, and probably over maybe 6, 8, 10 months, developed a product that I felt, you know, had some merit. And
was up to your quality?
Was up to my quality. However, I did send it out to cake artists across the country just to evaluate, to get their comments and opinion on.
To kind of do a beta test on it.
Exactly, yeah. And the feedback was good. And then it came, well, do I do this or not? And
okay, well, stay with that question. Listen, this is Jim Mazzetti. This is The American Dream. We'll be right back with Kevin O'Reilly from Satin Fine Foods.
If you're a small business owner, no one has to tell you that your business is one of the largest assets you possess. But have you ever taken the time to know what it's worth? Business valuation is not only critical for growing your company, but ultimately its eventual sale. At Miles Wealth Management, they can help you determine the value of your business through a simple yet comprehensive process that doesn't take months and costs thousands of dollars. For many years, Miles has provided you with insurance and financial services. Now they can help you ensure the growth and stability of your business for years to come. Call them today at 845-651-3070 for a free consultation, or visit them online at mileswealthmanagement.com. They're located on North Main Street in the Village of Florida. Miles Wealth Management, LLC, is an independent SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Miles Wealth Management and its investment advisory services are offered independent of Signature Investors Incorporated and any subsidiaries or affiliates.
This is Wayne Patterson of Better Homes and Gardens Rand Realty and host of The Real Estate Show, heard every Monday at 10 a.m., where you can learn how to buy and sell properties on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
Hi, this is Stacey Lawrence of the Greenwood Lake Garden Center, here with my co-host,
Kevin Sweeney of the Windermere Agency.
We would love it if you all would join us every Friday from 11 to 12 on WTBQ for Greenwood Lake Radio.
All Greenwood Lake, all the time.
WTBQ.
Okay, welcome back. This is Jim Mazzetti with The American Dream. And I remind everybody, we're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11. This show is sponsored by Miles Wealth Management, which I am a proud member of. And like every other great company out there, that company was started by my father, which I always refer to as my inspiration for becoming an entrepreneur and getting into business and rolling the dice and making things happen and giving it a shot each and every day. And I kind of want to bring people that are just kind of tuning in here. I got Kevin O'Reilly from Satin Fine Foods here, who, if you know, the only thing I can say, if you haven't heard of the company, think of Cake Boss. And if you've seen that show and the fondant and everything else that goes on there, but Kevin, we didn't give you enough credit here, and we're going to bring it up again. But Kevin, your product is also, just a reminder, it's 65 countries now you distribute this product into, which is quite amazing. But I didn't want to kind of lose that, but I just want to kind of set the stage for everybody that this company has grown from basically your basement into a worldwide enterprise now.
Yeah, that's correct. I really don't stop to think about it too often, but
not that you have time.
That way, yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's really a specialty niche product that I developed the product, and as you say, at home, out of the basement, and came with a product that worked, that people were happy with. When I devised the product, then it was really at that point taking that big leap, going into business. And at that time, I was 33 years of age. I had three young children. I think the ages at that time was 2, 4, and 6, two boys and a girl.
Oh, boy.
Had a mortgage, you know, all of that. And, you know, then you're making a choice. Do I make this big leap or not? Because obviously going into business these days, you know, you're looking at upwards of $250,000
to throw your hat in the ring,
exactly,
for sure.
You know, and that's you know, taking on loans, you know, a leasing a space, renovating a space, equipping it, would be considerably more than that. You know, and especially today,
especially the business you went into. This is not where you can work out of the corner bedroom in your house with a laptop. This is a full on, you got to create a product, produce the product, and then distribute the product, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's full on manufacturing. So at that time, I actually, through my local accountant, have put me in touch with, at the time, the National Bank of Florida.
Oh, my God, Florida, really? Oh, you have been here for a while.
Yeah, and I was introduced to a gentleman, Bob Ambrose, who you may know.
I do very well.
I remember Bob sitting me down and he says, "Hey, Kevin, you got to go home and come back to me with a business plan."
I need one for the file.
Yeah. So I think I went to the library and studied up on business plans and put together a plan and came back. And I remember Bob telling me that he reviewed it with the bank board of directors and came back and said that it was probably the best plan he had seen in 5 years. So I felt good about that. And
actually, you should feel good about that. Yeah. I know Bob Ambrose very well. He doesn't give out compliments easily.
that kind of made the, the path for the next step, which was getting an approval for a loan. And
now, did that business plan, and we talk about this, I talk about business plans a lot, and it sounds to me like that business plan actually helped you concrete that, listen, this is the right move to make. As opposed to, so I got to write a business plan. There's a couple of business plans you write, one for the bank and one for yourself, that a lot of people do. But a lot of business plans, it's just an idea expanded. But for people that are listening out there, think about taking this leap of faith. It is truly an important piece of the pie because, and again, you're writing this, you should be writing it for yourself. And the reason you write it for yourself is it lays out all the details that you need to look at, right?
Yeah, it truly does. And it's probably the single one piece that is so critical because it's a very personal piece. So all that criteria that you put down there from your idea to what your goal is, where you want to go, where you want to take this business, what it will take, number of employees, where really you see it going, and what it's going to take to get it there. They're all vital questions that are being asked and answered in the plan. And really the goal is that you write this plan and you're constantly rewriting it, you're changing it, you're updating
tweaking it. Yeah.
And it becomes really something that you live by. And, but it does start out with that that goal, that drive that's inside you, that comes from within, that if you have this idea and you really think that it has merit and you've done the education and the research, the due diligence, that you feel you're now at that point of, hey, I now have to make the big step.
Right.
I would always say that making that big step, it has to be an educated step. So it's important to go out there to be educated, to do that, do the homework so that you reduce the risk as you get into this new business. Because again, I was taking on large loans. As I said, I had a young family, I had a mortgage, I had other commitments. And, obviously you want to be able to fulfill the obligations and the payments as you move forward, so it really is critical.
And one can only imagine that pressure, quite frankly, in that decision-making side of it.
Yeah, and while you write this business plan for the bank, the professionals, because it's also something that, an accountant, an attorney is going to review.
And it's
obviously critical that as an owner of a new business that you have the right team around you, that they also have to be aware of what is this plan, what is it about, what are the goals, where do you see yourself in 1, 3, 5 years and beyond.
And can you really execute on the plan?
Exactly, yeah. And when you read the books out there, they'll talk about, I think the average business actually becomes, maybe breaks even between 3 and 5 years,
And most don't survive the first two.
Yeah, so you really have to do your homework. But again, it's not something to be discouraged about, that businesses do fail. I think it's going out there and doing the preparation, doing the legwork, finding out as much as you possibly can about what you're about to get involved with before you actually make that big leap. And some of the obvious people avoid. People focus on, you know, the things they're comfortable with. And sometimes you really have to take a really good hard look at the numbers, you know.
They call that the reality check.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I remember at one point talking to a gentleman up in Connecticut, and he had a business where he manufactured seltzer water, and he bottled this product and he sold it to the high-end restaurants and hotels in New York City. And he told me that if it was a one-liter bottle, that it cost them like maybe 5 cents to produce this. It's basically water, which is free, and it's carbonation.
Right.
But he said, my expenses, I've got, you know, 12 trucks on the road. They need gasoline. They need insurance. I've got employees. Apart from what he had in manufacturing as far as equipment. So while the manufacturing cost was low, his overheads were
for distribution,
still high, you know.
Yes.
So everything has a cost, and you have to look at that. And even if you started out of your basement or a home-based business, you have to consider overhead. You have to write in overhead and labor and these costs that will exist as you grow. So it's very important that you are very real with the numbers and your cost and what the actual, you know, margins will be and profit margins, and at the end of the day, what you'll be left with
right
after you go out there and you work 18-hour days for many years. So,
And that's the truth, isn't it? It isn't a 9-to-5 job. And I don't think there's actually many 9-to-5 jobs out there anymore. But I think what you're kind of the point you're making here in this business plan, and I want to kind of really drive it home, is listen, the importance of this is that the only person you're going to be lying to is yourself if you don't uncover every rock and literally try and account for everything that you could possibly think of.
Yep.
And then add a percentage on top of that for the stuff you didn't think of. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally, yeah. And that's really it. You got whatever industry you are in, whatever product or service you're looking at potentially producing and making your fortune on, you really have to be just real about it. And again, the more people you can pull in to get knowledge from and shared experience from, all of that will help, you know?
I think that's, can you get on a good point here? How important was it putting the right team together for you to help actually make that decision to go and not only actually making these, because you already made the decision to go forward with this, but then getting the education and surrounding yourself with the right team?
It really is crucial because, again, you develop the business plan, you have the professionals in place that are going to work with you, and probably, again, going back and giving Bob some credit here, I remember one of the things he said to me was, he said, you know what, it's important that you always are open and friendly with the bank. You know, don't try and
hide.
What you don't want to do is take a loan from the bank and run and hide and have it where they have to fish information out of you. It's very important that, again, your accountant, your lawyer, your banker, that you're open with them, that they are kept in the loop and as you move forward and grow the business, you know?
It's huge.
So those early years were really, I had actually leased a premises. I went in there, done a lot of the renovation work myself. I knew the equipment that needed to be ordered, so ordered equipment, started out very basic. Again, my first two employees, I hired a girl to work in our office. That's, I'm proud to say, still with me today.
17 years later.
Yep. And we actually hired a guy then in the back to work with me. So I had these two employees, and I kind of bounced around and wore all the hats, as they say. So, you know, before we really opened the doors, it was July 2001, and we started manufacturing products, spent about 2-3 weeks just literally working 15-hour days making product and building up a stock. Once the product was made, then it was putting the shirt and tie on
and going
out there and calling on distributors and selling that product. And our first real month in business was August 2001, And then a month later, of course, 9/11 hit, you know, so.
Holy mugler, that's
yeah,
right.
So people forget, but it affected many businesses, especially around the city.
Every business.
People weren't going out to eat or at the weekend as much. And,
right.
You know, so that was something that affected us. But we were able to fortunately live through that and get
hold on
and grow.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're gonna hold that thought, and why don't you kind of come back? Because I think you're hitting on the number one thing, which is effort and action. This is Jim Mazzetti. This is the American Dream. We'll be right back with Kevin O'Reilly from Satin Fine Foods.
Hey, Mike, I have good news and bad news. Good news is my son just got accepted to college.
Hey, congratulations, Bill. That's great news. What's the bad news?
We don't have enough money for his college education. I don't know how I'm going to tell him that we can't afford to pay all 4 years.
Listen, call the people at Miles Wealth Management. They helped me with my financial planning, and now I can afford my son's entire college tuition. To tell you the truth, for the first time in my life, I feel like I'm truly financially secure.
That's exactly what I need. Now, how do I get in touch with these guys?
You can call them at 845-651-3070, and their website is mileswealthmanagement.com. They're located right in the Village of Florida.
I'm calling them as we speak.
Miles Wealth Management, LLC is an independent SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Miles Wealth Management and its investment advisory services are offered independent of Signatory Investors, Inc., and any subsidiaries or affiliates. The Doctor's Inn with Middletown Medical every Thursday at 11 a.m. Tune in to hear their specialists discuss the latest techniques and innovative procedures right here on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
This is Marina Case, principal designer of the Red Shutters in downtown Warwick. Tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon and join me for The Style Show, a show about decorating, fashion, and fun on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
WTBQ weather.
We'll look for mostly sunny skies today with a high in the upper 40s, so it'll be a lot cooler than yesterday was. It'll be clear tonight with a low heading down into the upper 20s. Look for mostly cloudy skies to develop tomorrow. It'll be milder again in the low 50s. Showers could arrive tomorrow night after midnight more likely. Look for a low in the mid-40s. And Thursday, cloudy, breezy with showers. Could be some thunderstorms too and some heavy downpours with a strong cold front heading through. Highs will be in the lower 60s. I'm meteorologist Tony Salimo from the WTBQ Weather Center.
Welcome back. This is Jim Mazzetti with The American Dream. We're here with Tuesday from 10 to 11. My special guest today is Kevin O'Reilly from Satin Fine Foods, and pretty cool. I got to tell you, it's for the folks that if you're having a little tough time understanding because of the accent, do what I did my entire life. Listen harder. It's easy. Close your eyes, enjoy it, and enjoy what this man has to say and the things he's been through. And I kind of want to touch back on that, Kevin. We're talking a little bit off air. You know, all these steps you took to create the idea, create the business plan, surround yourself with the right team, and then you set out the timeline in which you thought you should be there. And sometimes it doesn't always track the way we think it's gonna.
Sure, sure. I like the intro song. I was a big Journey fan, so Don't Stop Believing is critical here. Again, having the team around me was very important. And then, you know, but it all ultimately always comes down to the individual, because you can have the team, you can have loans in place, you can have everything else, but it's really, this is, if you want to say, a dream. It's something that each individual puts together, and it's always in your mind as to
how it's going to look,
where it's going to go, what it's going to develop into. And, so it's really all about you as you move forward and how this unravels and happens. So I had obviously the sales of this product were going out wholesale, where we supply the product to distributors out there across the U.S. And, some of them, as I said, I had known.
From prior work.
Exactly, yeah. my prior job. And I put two lists together. And one was a list of distributors that I felt these guys would come on board within the first year. And then the second list was a list of distributors that were tougher guys that I felt, you know, could take 1 to 3 years to come on board. What was very interesting was probably looking back after 3 years where which guys came on board first. And sometimes the people that you know, the distributors that you're very friendly with, you have a good relationship with, I assumed, hey, this is
a no-brainer.
This is the low-hanging fruit. These
right.
are the guys that I can kind of, sell straight out the gate. And some of those guys, actually, it took a lot longer to sell them, you know. So you really, you put a plan together. You have to execute it. You have to stay to the plan. Obviously, you have to be able to adjust it as well along the way. And that's what I did. So initially, I was out calling on distributors in the Northeast USA. Then I would go a little further south to the Southeast, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, these big cities. And as I would take on distributors there, then it was time to start to head west and out to places like, again, you're going to the big city, Chicago, Dallas, St. Louis. And eventually, within a couple of years, I was out in California. And I remember going out and I think I flew into San Francisco and flew out of San Diego. And in the space of a couple of weeks, literally tried to blitz that market. So, again, I'm selling a food product. So I'm calling to distributors. I'm calling to end users, the bakers, the chefs in the hotels, some of the cake supply shops out there, anybody that was a potential customer for our product. And, I would say over that first, again, 3 to 5 year period was really, 1 to 5 years was really when I grew the business. And, we were selling a core product. And then at one point I got an invitation to go up to a trade show in Canada. And I knew that there were other maybe more competitive products up in the marketplace in Canada. And I figured, well, that's going to be a waste of time, and money to go up there. But I said, okay, I'll try it. So I went up there and actually had a great 3-day trade show and got quite a few leads at that show. And within maybe a couple of months had taken on some distributors
up in Canada.
Yeah. And then I would meet a part of our industry is dealing with these high-end, very talented cake designers that have their own cake business and use our product. So I would meet some of these people at these trade shows and, get the response that while I had developed the product for the American market, people that were coming from maybe England or parts of Europe or even Latin America would say, wow, your product's so much better than the local product we have, and that would push me to then travel to these markets and start to sell to some of these international markets. And and again, the key is to within your industry is to go to trade shows. So I think sometimes when I look back over 15 years of doing this, going to local trade shows, national trade shows, international trade shows.
So don't limit yourself.
Don't limit yourself. And you got to remember, again, it depends on the type of business that you're in. But I was trying to connect with these ingredient distributors that are all over the world. So going to these trade shows, and one of the ones I still go to is every 3 years in Munich, Germany. And while it's fun to go there, I go to that show and I've met so many great distributors there that come from places like Australia, the Middle East, Asia. And we today do business, as you said, in over 65
countries.
So believe it or not, most of those countries I've probably been to and I've personally met with these distributors. There's still quite a few I've actually never been to that we do business with these companies and I've never visited them. And some for obvious reasons, we have a distributor in Pakistan and the Lebanon and some of those Middle Eastern countries that obviously you have to think about safety.
That you might not should be going to at the moment.
That you may not be going to right now, yeah. But at the same time, the people there, are really no different than most markets
that's right.
Get up in the morning, they go to work, they have to eat, they're concerned about their families, they want the best for the families, they have birthdays and celebrations and weddings, which obviously involves our product. So there's a lot of markets out there that, that, and there was an opportunity for our product. So
I think you know, it's funny, and I don't mean this in a down way about Americans, but I think having the being an immigrant and having international experience is certainly kind of opened your eyes to what else is out there in the world, and not just located in just the U.S.
Yeah, I suppose we look at our history that you touched on in the beginning, and the Irish coming into the U.S. And I have cousins and relatives that talked about back in the day where the Bronx was the Italians, the Irish, the Jewish, and you go down today and you look at the Hispanic population, and while the Irish may have in some respects moved on, you have this Hispanic melting pot that is wonderful, and they're coming in and they have the opportunities, and there's so much happening today that is absolutely amazing. So yeah, you have to look at different markets around the world, and America's a great country, probably one of the few places I could have achieved what I have. But yet you go to Europe and you go to Australia and New Zealand and other countries that are great places.
Great places with great people and great businesses, and obviously need the product.
Yeah, and there's up-and-coming places. You know, I was at a trade show 2 weeks ago in the UK, and I met this lady, and she's a distributor of business in Nigeria and is keen to have our product. So you're always looking at the new places as well, and that. And probably, you know, going out there selling our product, we always sold it in bulk into these distributors. Probably one of my more fonder stories was when I first went to Australia, which probably would have been about 2009, and going down there, and I spent 2 weeks there, and I called on maybe six distributors. And I remember after that 2 weeks flying back, and I think they all appreciated the fact that as the owner of this company in New York, I had flown down and taken the time to spend with them and get to know their business. And I remember being on a plane flying back and thinking, wow, here I've got four container orders going to four different distributors in Australia on the other side of the world. So, that kind of makes your hair stand up. So that was exciting, and obviously part of the success of building the product. But again, like any product or service, you also have to look at what is that product and what is the service.
The quality.
And I still say to this very day, I always say that, you know, you can do whatever you do as far as marketing or as a personality, but the product must be able to sell itself. You know, it's got to be a quality product.
It's got to stand on its own, because eventually you can only do so much selling.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
And be it the product or service, but certainly in our case, a product, and it was a quality product. And I would always tend to aim more towards having a quality product than going with something that's more run-of-the-mill.
And the volume, you said, it's something you just, instead of worrying about the quality, try and pump out as much volume as possible. But you ended up getting both.
We were fortunate that we got both, that we make a quality product and people appreciate the people that work with our product, the cake artists, the bakers, the pastry chefs in the high-end hotels that appreciate our product. And I probably have always used the analogy of, if you look at ice cream and we think of Häagen-Dazs, obviously Häagen-Dazs is that premium brand product. And, and our product is somewhat the same, that we've always aimed to have keep quality. Being number one, you know.
You know, I think I don't want to let this go real quick, and I don't mind if we go a little bit over. I think one of the things that we've talked about for the last 5 or 10 minutes here that I think should come screaming across the air to any of those entrepreneurs or businessmen are listening is, the amount of effort you put into and time and dedication to your business. And you're just at a trade show 2 weeks ago, which takes time away from your family, takes time away from your business. But you have to, it's actions. And I always tell you, listen, the more action, the more business. The more action, the more networking. The more networking, the more opportunities. And I think, you're getting that right on the net. You cannot not do those things. Or you can't sit back on your laurels either, right?
Correct, yeah. And again, I started out with a goal maybe of giving up a good job with a good car, a company car, and all the benefits.
Expense account, and home at five. Yeah.
And then getting into a business that took most of my time. Yeah. And, you know, you say, well, what is your goal? What is it? Is it about building a business? Is it about purely making money? I probably got into it looking to, hey, if I can have the freedom of owning my own business, and if I could get to the point of sustaining the income that I had with my old employer, I was happy with that, and then to have something to grow upon. And over the years, you know, growing the business, we've grown from 4 employees to where today we're about 74, 76 people.
That's amazing.
And it is. It's a lot of time and work and effort. And it really comes back down to the individual. Are they prepared to put in that time, work, effort today? And what is the goal? What is the ultimate goal? Is it purely just for financial benefit? Because usually I would also say, too, that it's maybe the next generation that really benefit, because you spend 15 or 20 years growing a business. Over the years, the money went right back into new equipment and upgrading and that kind of thing. You know,
every penny goes back into it. Let's hold that thought. Yeah. This is Jim Mazzetti with The American Dream. I'm here with Kevin O'Reilly from Satin Fine Foods. We'll be right back.
If you're a small business owner, no one has to tell you that your business is one of the largest assets you possess. But have you ever taken the time to know what it's worth? Business valuation is not only critical for growing your company, but ultimately its eventual sale. At Miles Wealth Management, they can help you determine the value of your business through a simple yet comprehensive process that doesn't take months and cost thousands of dollars. For many years, Miles has provided you with insurance and financial services. Now they can help you ensure the growth and stability of your business for years to come. Call them today at 845-651-3070 for a free consultation, or visit them online at mileswealthmanagement.com. They're located on North Main Street in the Village of Florida. Miles Wealth Management, LLC, is an independent SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Miles Wealth Management and its investment advisory services are offered independent of Signature Investors Incorporated and any subsidiaries or affiliates.
Hi, this is Austin DuBois of Bluestein Shapiro, Rich & Barone. Tune in every Friday at 10 a.m. for It's the Law and learn what the law is. Ask questions, get answers right here on WTBQ, radio worth listening to. I'm your vehicle,
baby. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor right here on WTBQ, radio worth listening to. Sunday mornings, 8 a.m., 855-560-9900 is the Car Doctor hotline. Give me a call. Let's solve that problem together. WTBQ.
Welcome back. This is Jim Mazzetti. This is The American Dream. This show is sponsored by Miles Wealth Management, which we do every Tuesday from 10 to 11. My guest today is Kevin O'Reilly from Satin Fine Foods, who, by the way, is located in Chester, New York. And he is a proud resident of Warwick, New York. We're not going to give his address out because everybody's going to want free samples. But Kevin, welcome back, and kind of bring people up to speed here. We're going through kind of the path in which you took to get here, and how you actually went about growing the business on the sales end of it. But you know, kind of touching on that, you know, you gave the basis here. I want to make sure everybody knows this. Like you got into business, but you had a huge basis for knowledge base for what you started. So you were from the ground up. I mean, you learned everything about, you know, what you were doing, how you were doing it, and then were able to convey that in the sales design, and then took that to a business. And Correct. Here we are today in Chester, New York, yeah. and you grew it from 2 employees to now we have, what, 65? Yeah. 70?
74.
74 yeah. employees. Yeah. I mean, and...
Well, I suppose if you look at any business and you think of somebody maybe in the jewelry business or clothing business or somebody that's in construction... even the laborer out there in a construction site may have an idea for a product that might make construction in some form
easier,
better, improve on it. And it's to take that idea and really research it and do all that work to where you develop something that you really believe in, and that you have to be ready. It's not a matter of going out to the bank and the bank give you money and you're using their money. It's using your money. It's your investment.
It's your money.
You have to really believe in it.
That's right. Good point.
So we had grown over from 2001 up until about 2011. And during those years, we had invested in some new equipment and also expanded. We were in a leased facility over those years. And then in 2011, it was time to make another big step, which was buying a building in Chester, renovating a building and equipping a building with state-of-the-art equipment. So again, it was a huge financial investment that you get back into. And
another big decision.
Another big decision. While all the time that any profit that you were making, you have the benefits of owning a company. You take a decent wage from the business, but you make a decision, or certainly I made a decision, that any profits will go back into the business to help it grow over time.
Right.
And, you have to be prepared, I think, to be able to do that as well. Some people, take the profits, run, go, enjoy it, and to each their own. It really depends on what your goals are.
Right. It truly is. I mean, and I think success is different for other people. Everybody's definition of success is different, but you want to grow it.
And I think part of when I look back and people ask me about success, I would say, over the years, many companies approached me and said, "Hey, Kevin, the Satinize product is great, but we could make a product and we could brand it for you. We could private label for you. You could expand your line." And while I did engage in conversations and consider that, because you're thinking, well, is it good to be in a business where you just make one product, or maybe we should have an expanded line of products? And I did consider those items. At the end of the day, I still kind of pushed them away and kept focused on the product that we manufactured, which was Satinize. And I do think that a good part of the success was remaining focused. So while it could have been easy to be distracted into other things, being focused was very important.
Discipline.
Yeah. And again, I know
people, and that's not easy.
I know people out there manufacturing all sorts of products, whether it's retail, wholesale. There are people that call on me that manufacture cardboard boxes and will say it's the most boring thing, but somebody has to do it. There's a market for it, and you have to do it right.
Right.
So it's
not easy. Kind of to your point, you have to consider those other offers and business. Because I think you always you have to keep your ear to the ground. You have to be educated on what's going on around you. And at the end of the day, you still made the decision, listen, we're going to continue on the path as we set out here and keep growing the company. And then let's also not let this fall on deaf ears. Your thought about constantly reinvesting in your business, I think that's any business. I think anybody that thinks they're going to get to a point and we're going to just coast from here is sorely mistaken.
Not at all.
That's a recipe for disaster.
I think the difference today, though, is that when we moved in 2011 into a much bigger facility, you think that it's the answer to all your prayers, but the reality was, while we had a bigger facility and it did help certainly in production and maybe our office layout, it was really the beginning of the next phase. So that next phase was pulling in some more skilled people, setting up departments. And again, that's only 4 years ago. So at that point, there was maybe, it allowed me, I suppose, to pass off some of the responsibility. And today within our company, we have our production department, our quality and control, research and development. We have our shipping department. We have marketing department, we have our financial department, our sales department. And probably part of, again, growing a company was when those departments were set up, and if I happened to be away, had a trade show, gone for 5 or 6 days, and I would come back, it was usually the head of each department that would come into my office and sit and brief me on what was happening. And then I got to the point where that was taking up so much time. So now it was really about hiring a clone. How do I clone myself?
How do I hire
that right individual that can do essentially what I do? And at that point, I hired a really good local general manager. And, today when I look at the company, we have great departments, great people that work for us. Truly, I say that in all aspects of the company. We have good leaders within the company. Probably the core departments within the company that drive the company would be, again, our financial, production, marketing, sales.
Yeah.
They're really the areas.
Well, you're pointing out a very good point here. I mean, you took a business, and instead of creating a job for yourself, obviously that was what it was in the beginning. Now, the true objective as an entrepreneur, at least for yourself and for a lot of people, the idea here is to create a business. And business is a business that runs with you or without you, but certainly not without your leadership.
Yeah, well, today I'm more in that leadership role, but again, it's important that you have a good team. But so there's a lot of important pieces that go into this, and it doesn't really matter what stage you are in life.
Right.
If you're 50-something or you're 20-something, obviously, if you have that dream and goal, I would be encouraging people to educate yourself, do the due diligence, and go with it, follow that dream. But you have to go in there knowing what you're getting into. And
eyes wide open.
Yeah, and it's a great thing, as I said off air, that we wake up every day and we have a whole day to do with as we please. And
right.
If you can steer your day-to-day in a direction that is really something where you're enthused. And, I get up every day and I'm fairly enthused, and I'm always... feel good about the day, and
I feel blessed.
I really do. Yeah, totally. I feel blessed. And yet I know I have a responsibility. Sometimes when I walk into the office and work, and I know we've got 74 people in there, and not only as individuals, but their families depend on this business.
Yes, they do.
So I take it very seriously.
I'm so glad you said that. And every successful CEO that I've gotten to speak to has had the same common theme. It's not just about the employee that we're responsible for, but responsible for their family as well, because they're our family, right? Eventually, if you have a true, solid, successful business, everybody is working for a common goal. But that takes true leadership, you clearly have and have developed, and keeping your people on the same mindset, going to the same goals. Mm-hmm. Not a simple thing to accomplish, but the great way to run business, great way to be who you are and get this across to everybody that may be out there listening.
Yeah, and the other thing I would also say to the listener today is that sometimes we think that today, the age we live in, is a very tough age to go out there and develop a business, but I've from time to time thought about setting up this business, say, if it was in the 1970s or the 60s versus
today,
2001 when I started. And we have great advantages today with certain tools, and such as the internet
and
phones and computers and all of these things that really work to our advantage.
Right. And so I think you're key. I mean, you think today is so much easier, as difficult as it may seem. Take advantage of those tools that are out there.
Totally. Agree? And especially when I look at our international business, that we communicate with people in the Lebanon and in the Middle East and in Asia,
right,
and Latin America. And this morning I walked in and I had an email from my distributor down in Boca Raton in Colombia,
So, it's fantastic.
But it's those tools. It's the internet and trade shows and using those correct tools that can really help grow a business in this day and age.
Thank you, Kevin. What an inspiration you've been today for me especially, and not mind our listeners. This is Jim Mazzetti. My special guest today has been Kevin O'Reilly from Satin Fine Foods. This is the American Dream, and we look forward to hearing from you and seeing you next week. Take care.
Thank you.